Happy New Year, Art of Construction. I'm so stoked to be announcing that our Master Facilitator community is now live. Stop. Come join us with the link in the description of the podcast. And what is the Master Facilitators? Put simply, Master Facilitators are those making shit happen in construction. You listening, we are construction business owners and leaders adopting new technology, materials, and systems into our companies and projects to grow our business and build better buildings. Join a community of us like-minded members of the Art of Construction tribe who are dedicated to doing things better. So in this community, you will get to meet fellow master facilitators and AOC podcast guests to connect with them. Bonus post-episode discussions every Tuesday for the podcast released with the week prior. We'll be discussing this podcast live next Tuesday. Private Q&A sessions with your podcast guests, monthly lessons and workshops with construction industry influencers, a job board and monthly growth challenges, in-depth product reviews and testimonials from power users, and so much more. So our main focus areas are advancements in construction technology, construction materials, and construction building systems that we call System Built, and industry thought leadership with our AOC influencers. You listening, I cannot wait to meet you in the group. We have so much planned for you all in terms of bonus content in 2023, and highly encourage everyone who's serious about growing their business and being part of the future of construction industry to join. Any questions, email our community manager in the show notes. We got you covered. I cannot wait to see you there. Crush it out there, tribe.
Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we have a few podcasts that we're putting out there around our buddy Matt McMullen, who has went out to Greenbuild, credit where credit's due, a great conference that I personally haven't had the pleasure to go to, but you can't be everywhere at once, but you can have the Art of Construction podcast to bring it all back to the kindling. So we're super excited to have a connection that Matt McMullen met at Greenbuild, and I'm going to let him talk about that, and he's get to come in as our guest co-host today. But the main message that we're going to talk to you about, Tribe, is that Cradle to Cradle Certified is the leading global standard for products. A truly sustainable product and world is one that is healthy, climate positive, and equitable. And I read that from them because I'm super excited to talk through the different perspectives coming up about Cradle to Cradle. And we got some cool stories to talk about, but the main benefit for you, Tribe, is that it provides a pathway to optimization, right? No more snowflakes and unicorns. Let's put this stuff together that it's a way to turn pledges into action and meet the moment. And I love that meet the moment because you can get all excited about something, but construction can be messy about putting it all together. And before I turn it over to Matt, who's our guest co-host, who's been on the show many times, I want to start off on my perspective is that Matt has taught me all about the cradle to cradle continuum of care. And when I say it's a mouthful, cradle to cradle continuum of care, and I think about this, and when I turn over to Matt, it was what, 4 or 5 years ago. And Matt just kept talking. I'm like, God, Matt, that's such a mouthful. It's so many words. Can't we just call it something simple like our customer care? And he's like, fine, whatever you want to call it. But you have to understand what the origin of this. And I'm super excited that the team went out and has someone that is what they do. They have a whole certified products program around this. And this came out of my window and door company, where I know that, and I know where this phrase now comes from, but I bring it to you, Tribe, to say we've talked a lot about sustainability as it relates to the building envelope with our Passive House friends. And this conversation is going to be focused around a lot more about how that all comes together on building products in general. So, Matt, thank you so much I'm super excited. I'll let you talk about who we get to have in today. Thank you for coming in and sharing this story with me around cradle to cradle continuum of care.
Hey, Devin, thanks for having me on, man. Really looking forward to this conversation. So, like you mentioned, I was at Greenbuild. I go every year. This year it was at the Moscone Center in San Francisco, and was getting ready to go to this keynote session for Jane Fonda. And Jane is 84 now. So she's like almost, I think, the exact same age that her dad was, Henry Fonda, when he was in on Golden Pond, but just incredibly dynamic speaker and still sharp as a tack. But ended up meeting Ren through someone who I met randomly at a table, and we sat right down in front. Ren and I just started talking about what she does. We started talking about Bill McDonough and Cradle to Cradle, and I'm like, hey, we got to have you on the podcast. So that's how it came about. And one of the there's a couple things I want to touch on here today. If you've had biology, which I had in college and high school, Earth is a closed loop system. And we have finite resources, and that's what really Cradle to Cradle is all about. And what you're going to hear is just sort of this evolution where really it was about cradle to grave. First things were made, and then they were just thrown away, just disposed of. And then it switched to where, okay, well, now we're going to try and do some things. In the meantime, we're going to try to recycle. But then cradle to cradle is really a closed loop system where you're creating stuff and then you're reusing it, repurposing it, so that you're not disposing of it, and it just sits in the ground and becomes toxic. So look forward to this conversation with Ren as we move forward. So a little bit about Ren. So Ren is with Cradle to Cradle Products in Innovation Institute. That's a mouthful. So we're going to call it C2C. She's a University of Oregon Duck. We love her. She's a fellow Pac-12 member, like the Colorado Buffaloes, and has a she'll tell a little bit more about herself, but has an interior designer background, and really will, I think, open our eyes in terms of the influence that interior designers have in the cradle to cradle chain and just the sheer amount of stuff that they specify going into built projects.
Awesome. Well, thanks for teeing this up. Let's go have as much fun as possible. Pop the top. Here we go. Lock and load, trap. What's your favorite beverage?
Hey, my favorite beverage is called a Pink Lady.
Pink
It
lady.
is an egg white cocktail. It's one of the sours, right? And
Okay.
so there is a fantastic cocktail bar here in Portland where I live. So if anyone is in town, we always take you to the Teardrop Lounge. And I went in and I said, I love pisco sours. I like whiskey sours. I like gin fizzes. And the bartender looked at me and he said, "Girl, I got you." And so he made me this Pink Lady, which is it's a gin. It's the gin based of the sours. And so I think there's a little grenadine in there. It's a little bit tart. It is very alcoholic, and it is a little frothy, which I love. So.
Well, that sounds like you set us in the holiday spirit. I'm going to definitely order. Is that going to be wrong when I just go up to the bar and just start just ordering pink ladies?
No, it's I
No.
think it's in Old Mr. Boston, so I think you should be good.
All right, well, we'll find out, right? What
Hey,
is a
Devin,
favorite?
I think she moved into the top five all time
Go
drinks.
ahead. Yeah, I've never heard that one. What is a favorite place you've traveled?
Yeah, so I have a very specific answer to this. My favorite place in the world is the Mariage Frere Tea House in Paris. It's their flagship on Bourg Thiburg in the Marais. And I love it because it is a full body experience. You go in and it is a it's their retail store first, and all of the tea, and it's been in business since I think 1850s. So it's been around a long time. And so they keep all their teas in these massive containers, these tin containers. So the whole place just smells like all of these teas at once. And so that's what you hit, that's what hits you first, is all of these teas on display and the smell of them. And then as you enter, there's a courtyard with the salon, the tea salon. And it is like going to another time. It's all this wicker furniture. They have their own branded linens and teapots and silverware. And all the waiters are wearing linen suits and there are palm trees. And it is just this whole body experience because then you get to taste the tea and they have products, you know, jams made with tea and their scones are amazing. And so that is my favorite place on earth, is this tea house in Paris. where I go every time.
You know how to set the stage, right?
I do. I mean,
having a pink lady and then going to have tea and a pink lady. I'm all in. Before we get into the cradle to cradle stuff, what is your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos that we're always trying to break down that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah. Well, as you can probably tell, I love eating. My parents were both chefs. And so I grew up eating. I grew up talking about eating. I grew up making food. So I love to plan a good dinner party and cook for it and have my friends over and have just a wonderful time of eating and drinking together.
Well, I can't wait for a day to share a meal with you somewhere, sometime, because you have definitely set the stage. Well, what is your story that led us here today in being the built environment lead for the Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute?
It's kind of a long and windy path, but it's actually very circular, which is, it's kind of lovely that I'm here at Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute now. So I have an art history background, actually, before I went to U of O, and I am a classic millennial who graduated during the recession. So I practiced interior design in Alaska, where I'm from, because I could still get a job after my art history degree. So I went and started practicing interior design, and a carpet rep came to our firm one time and said, "Here is my carpet. It is Cradle to Cradle certified," and told me about it. And I was like, "That's so cool." And I became sort of a Cradle to Cradle certified ride or die fan from that time on. And that was at a time when we were talking about sustainable buildings was all about sort of recycled content and energy efficiency and that type of thing. So it was very early days of LEED. So after that, I practiced a few years in Alaska, where I'm from. I did my graduate work at U of O, graduated and started practicing in Portland, and decided to take my firm PVC free. And I did that because I was looking at what Cradle to Cradle Certified was about. And I thought to us that we as a firm should have a sustainability story that was more impactful than just we do some projects that are LEED certified. Like, we should have a story about ourselves. And I was looking at Cradle to Cradle Certified, and I was like, there's a big thing in here, and it is PVC. What does that mean? And so I really got into it. And that's when I really started like careening off of the design path and into the sustainability world. And so I was recruited to do some sustainability filtering for a digital software platform. So I built that for them. The last 2 years, I was at the International Living Future Institute running the Declare label and the Living Product Challenge. And then I like to say I sort of moved next door to Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute. And like I said, it feels like I've come full circle, because Cradle to Cradle is really where I started, and here is where I have ended up. So that is my long-winded way of saying here I am.
I absolutely love that. And one of my mentors, as I broaden my horizons out there as a kid from North Dakota, my mentor in North Dakota said, "Devin, always have something in your back pocket that you can sell. That's not just a standard thing, right? But you better know your audience, right?" And so I love the story of a sales rep that we call trusted advisors, because that's not, you're not just checking the box, you're understanding your audience to have a tool in your pocket. And that person came in there talking about Cradle to Cradle as a cool tool. And through carpet, you fell in love with this platform. Am I understanding that right?
Yes.
I love
this
that.
This poor man, I've been telling this story for like 10 years. I should probably let him know that he's like my origin story.
Well, this podcast is a great way for him to, that's what we do here, right? Because in all seriousness, that's where I didn't even really know what this meant until Matt has been mentoring me all these years. And it's about passing the baton and not letting it go cradle to grave, right? Cradle to cradle to the next person, the next thing, to take care of this earth better. So, I want you to answer this question and then have Matt circle back on this. What does it mean for a product to be Cradle to Cradle certified? And what is the story of the development of Cradle to Cradle? And give us an acronym, because I mean, we've now said Cradle to Cradle 7 times for the first time.
Yeah, I love it. The Cradle to Cradle certified program comes out of the Cradle to Cradle design philosophy, which was written about in a book called Cradle to Cradle by Bill McDonough and Michael Brungart. And the Cradle to Cradle certified program allows manufacturers to take that design philosophy that they read about in that book and turn it into practice. And so it is a standard, like we said in the beginning, it's a leading global standard for sustainable products. It's holistic, science-based and third-party verified. And so in order to get Cradle to Cradle certified, a manufacturer has to go through this certifying process. And so what that is that we have these five areas of impact. So we've got material health, clean air and climate protection, water and soil stewardship, product circularity, and social fairness. The Cradle to Cradle certified standard has always been this holistic. It has always had these five buckets. Of course, the requirements to meet these five buckets has changed over the years, you know, as our knowledge deepens and things happen. But it has always been this holistic, which is why I liked it as a designer. And so a product will be evaluated across all five of these categories. So they'll work with an assessor to really dig into what is in my product, how is it made, what type of emissions are being emitted, how much energy is used, what are we doing with the water, how is it contributing to a circular economy, which I'm sure we'll get into, and also how does this company treat their people, their workers, and how do our suppliers treat their workers? And they're evaluated across all five. And they get a level assigned to it, you know, bronze, silver, gold, or platinum. And whatever their ranking is, their lowest ranking across those five categories becomes their overall certification level. And that's our way to ensure that people don't try to game the system, right? And do really well on one thing, but lag on something else. And so we want to eliminate this sort of greenwashing and promote innovation and encourage manufacturers to start at one level, but always be looking to achieve the next thing, to get to their net zero goals, to optimize their product. So that is a little bit about how a product becomes certified. And at the end of it, they'll come out with a certificate that says this carpet or this curtain wall system or this textile is Cradle to Cradle certified at the bronze level or at the silver level or whatever level they've achieved.
Well, that's, yeah, man, that's fascinating. And it, you know, a little, well, one question to, and comment to make, and then a little bit of a story, is when I first heard Cradle to Cradle, like, I'm a visual graphic thinker, you know, being an architect. And the first thing I thought of was, you know, those things that you would see in old movies where they would show the nursery and they had like all the nurses in there and they're moving babies around from cradle to cradle. And so, yeah, that was like, that was my first thought. But when I first started to get into sustainability with our firm, and this is back in the olden days, right? Like back in the dark ages. And it was like the early 90s. And there was one woman that we had to contact, and she was with the EIA San Francisco chapter. And there was a book that she put together that pointed you to various companies that you go to that had non-toxic products, you know. And so I think like AFM was the San Diego paint company. And there was a Lucan Color Corporation out of Greenwich, Connecticut, that had non-toxic stains. And, you know, it's been amazing to me to see how things have evolved over this, you know, 30 some years in the sophistication. So having said that, Ren, let me ask you a question. We've got a lot of entrepreneurs out in our listening audience that are creating products and things like that. How would they go about getting a building product to get Cradle to Cradle certification? What's the process?
The process is you go first to our website, c2ccertified.org, take a look at the process and poke around the product registry, see who else has done it. There's a tab that shows you, you know, all of the process listed, but in a nutshell, first you'll let us know that you're interested. You'll meet with, you know, me or someone from our team and we'll talk about your product, what the opportunities are. We'll get you connected with an assessor because this is a third-party verified certification. We'll have you work with an assessor and the assessor will help you do a life cycle assessment. They'll help you dig into what's in your product down to the chemical level. So they're going to look at what's in your product down to 100 parts per million, which is, you know, 0.01% of a product, right? It's not just like there's metal in it. Like we want to know, has the metal been coated in anything? Has the metal, does it have a glue attached to it? Like what is in the powder coat and what went into that dye? Like we want to get all into the details and then we'll look at how the product was made in terms of the impacts, you know, carbon, energy, water, that type of thing. And once you have all of that information accumulated, you're going to send it back to Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute, and we will verify that information. And then you will get certified. Money is exchanged, of course, because that's how we maintain the institute and continue our research and things like that. But that is it in a nutshell.
Yeah. So you guys are like an independent third party nonprofit that, you know, comes in and takes a look at this stuff. So yeah, no, I mean, I'm familiar with parts per million. You know, that's one of those. That's like my net worth. So very familiar with that percentage. Hey, so let's change topics a little bit. So we're going to talk about interior designers, and just want a big shout out to Able Design Group, which was the group that I was with prior to joining Devin here at the Art of Construction. And really the first time that I got embedded with interior designers and started to get a feel for who they are, what they do. I mainly just hung out with architects and only work with interior designers as consultants. But in our pre-interview, you and I and Scott had just a really fascinating discussion about the important role that interior designers play in the process of specifying and implementing sustainable design products. So let me throw it to you and let you educate our audience about that topic specifically.
Yeah. So overall, I'm sure we've talked about this statistic a lot on this podcast, which is that the building industry contributes between like 37 and 40% of global carbon emissions every year. So the building industry in general has a very large impact on the carbon that we use as a world. And so when you break that down, it's estimated that 10% of annual carbon emissions come from materials and construction. And it's estimated by 2050, interior designers alone will have control over 10% of all annual carbon emissions. So interior designers have a huge impact on the environment, especially when you take into account the number of times that a building is renovated. Like, for instance, I'm sitting in a house right now that was built in 1950. But we can tell from all the varying renovations we have done that this house has had many, like there was a hardwood floor put on, some wacko put carpet on top of it at one point, then that got removed, then the hardwood floor was refinished. At some point, someone put linoleum in the kitchen. So the number of times that you like replace the products in a project really starts to add up. And so interior designers are in control of those specifications. And so the impact that they have really starts to add up.
You know, you bring up some really important points, and especially for our GCs that are listening in right now and our subcontractors, is we have a large portion of our audience that does renovations specifically. And, you know, I want to call it sort of like archaeological work that these guys are doing, you know, where they're coming in and they're having to dig down and they're finding all those like yummy, tasty layer cake things that you talked about, where they're getting a carpet, they're getting the linoleum, they're dropping down to some other asbestos product, et cetera. And so I think you really bring it home for them is that, you know, they're sort of the first line of what has been specified in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the good, bad, and ugly to that as well, right? A lot of GCs that I work with, like, well, just Devin, why would you rehab this? Or why do we work so hard to do this? Just tear it all down. It's so much easier to just get rid of it all. And I'm like, well, where's it all going to go if we just get rid of it versus just deal with the asbestos this or solve this problem there, right? And figuring out this. And I think that's where you have to have platforms like this to figure it out. I guess I raise my hand and say, Matt, you kind of talked about circular economy, and I guess I need some help of saying, you know, Ren, can you talk about what does it mean to have a circular economy and how far away are we from that being a reality?
Yeah, great question. So here's to go back to what you just said, here's a stat that kind of blows my mind, which is that the building industry is account for 40% of waste by volume that is sent to the landfill every year. So we are really good at building things and then tearing them down and then sending them to the landfill. So that is why we talk about having a circular economy, which is the paradigm that we're in now, or the method that we're in right now, is to extract things, manufacture them, use them, and dispose of them, just send them away to the landfill. And a circular economy, transitioning to a circular economy, represents a paradigm shift of how can we reduce what we send to the landfill by redesigning products, by redesigning buildings, so that rather than the end of life, the only option is to throw them away, but there are multiple options for them. Can they be recycled? Can they be turned back into themselves? Can they be composted? Can they be re-engineered in some way? And so when I talked about the carpet rep that, you know, talked about their cradle to cradle certification back in 2011, probably 2010, the classic example was carpet that turns into carpet. So a lot of the commercial carpet that you see these days is manufactured in a way that you can send it back to those manufacturers and they will pull it apart and they will melt that nylon back down. It's nylon 6 is easy to break back down into itself and re-extrude it as new nylon. And they'll pull the backing off and they'll crunch it back up and turn it right back into backing. So that is the classic cradle to cradle, like product that turns back into itself story. But as the certification has evolved, the framework has evolved, we've included other pathways for manufacturers because we realize that's not, you know, a scalable solution for everybody. And like you said, Matt, nature is a circular process. So there's some products that can be composted. Linoleum is one of them, can be composted, which is really cool. But maybe there are some products that are using a lot of recycled material. Maybe it's designed to be disassembled and re-put together. And so that is what we talk about when we talk about a circular economy, is how do we redesign things so that they can be reused as a material, a base material, again and again, rather than just continuing to extract raw materials. And to answer your question earlier, we are about 8% circular. The economy currently is 8% circular, and it is estimated that we need to double that in order to have a very feasible, thriving world. So,
yeah, fascinating stuff. It makes me think back way back many moons ago in 2017 when we released a show 78, as we're closing on 300, titled "How Does Biomimicry Apply to Architecture?" And at the time I was like, what's biomimicry? I want to, and Cynthia Fishman blew my mind, who she's now a professor at CU, but she ran the Biomimicry Institute, where like the highest glass composition is from a shell at the bottom of the ocean, and figuring out how to learn and blend and do stuff that the earth is putting out there that they've kind of already created. But on the flip side of that, there's been a lot of stuff that's been created that is maybe a little bit more toxic. I would love to challenge you a little bit. Can you talk about some building materials that are very far away from your standard or really bad for the environment or maybe even manufactured in some inhumane ways?
Yeah. So cradle to cradle certified has a restricted substances list. In the United States, well, in the world in general, there are about between 80 and 90,000 chemicals currently. And in the United States, I think less than 4% have been tested for human health and toxicity, and only 5 have ever been banned. So the regulations in the United States is sort of behind where the scientific community is in knowing how toxic chemicals are affecting our bodies, are affecting our world. And so on the cradle to cradle certified restricted substances list, we have about 26,000 chemicals. And so we are working with manufacturers who want to pull these toxic chemicals out of their products. And so some of the most well-known products or chemicals that we have on our restricted substances list, our oh no list, as we say. The big ones are PVC, PFAS, which have been getting a lot of attention in the media. I know The Daily Show and John Oliver did a show about them. They're called forever chemicals, all those nonstick chemicals. And so that's a class of chemicals that we have on our list. Formaldehyde is on there, heavy metals, asbestos, obviously. Those are just sort of the biggest ones that are known. And so they are on our list. And when you have a cradle to cradle certified product, it has none of those things. So one of the things I like to sort of emphasize is if you think back to the olden days, you remember that new carpet smell, right? We can all smell that new carpet smell. Think to yourself, when is the last time you were in a commercial building and smelled that? It's been a long time, right? And that is because basically all the major manufacturers of carpet in the United States and in Europe are cradle to cradle certified, and they have removed those chemicals that make that toxic smell out of their product. So that is a success story. And I can get a little bit more into some of these specific chemicals if you'd like, but we are a platform and a framework to help people pull those products out of their, those toxic chemicals out of their product.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ren. It's one of those where when I was at, during the Great Recession, I was at the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research and the National Center for Atmospheric Research as their director of facilities. And we did two LEED Platinum buildings there. And I remember when they were buildings that we renovated. And when the all of the staff moved out and then they moved back in, their first comment was, wait, it doesn't smell like a new building. Which to me was like, because there was no off-gassing that was occurring. And I was just thinking when you were saying that, I was trying to think, when's the last time I smelled that kind of new smell? And it's in cars.
Yeah.
Like if you get in a new car, you still smell that off-gassing. And it used to be like a thing of status and luxury. And now you're like, oh my God, I got to roll down the windows because I don't want to be breathing this stuff in.
Yeah. So on our restricted substances list, we evaluate chemicals from their, in terms of their hazard, from the beginning of their manufacturing process, right? So we want to make sure they are not toxic anywhere along that supply chain. And I know we're going to talk about how contractors are involved in here, but we want to make sure that a chemical is not toxic to extract, to manufacture, to be around during construction, for the end user, and for the environment at any point. So that's why we have all these chemicals on our list. And so we firmly believe, and this gets a little bit into our social fairness category, that we don't think you can create a really sustainable circular world if you have something that is toxic at some point during the supply chain, right? That is not an equitable, sustainable future. So the chemicals that we have on this list are toxic at some point or at all points during that supply chain and use of the product. So that's why they're on the list.
Yeah. And I absolutely love that. It's like all or nothing. That's impossible. The no has to be realistic, right? So you're talking about, it's crazy numbers that you're talking about, but what can we do about that?
Well, the one thing you can do, this is my call to designers always, is to keep asking for this. So when I started as a designer and we asked the carpet manufacturers if we could have a PVC-free backing, they all just kind of laughed at us. And now it is absolutely standard. So one of the things that pushes the industry is having a certification like Cradle to Cradle Certified, which sets a standard and a pathway for manufacturers. And then to have designers say, we want to work with products that do this because it matters to us. And so we will start specifying products that do that.
So Ren, you've bitten off a pretty big task here. And, you know, Devin and I always joke about like, yeah, how do you eat the 300-pound dog? You know, it's sort of one bite at a time. But can you talk a little bit with us about sort of what your day looks like from day to day as you take on these huge tasks and what are the most important part of your jobs currently? And like, how do you prioritize that with such a big task and goal ahead of you?
Yeah. So my job is really just to straddle that difference between, not difference, but straddle the line between manufacturers and designers and to get everyone talking the same language so we can start to measure impact. So I work a lot with manufacturers who have, you know, made net zero pledges or they've made some sort of science-based initiative target and they need to make it, or they've heard from their designers that they want a PVC-free option or something like that. So they come to Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute and say, help us do this, help us achieve these goals. And so part of my job is to talk to manufacturers about why it is in their best interest to do this type of work, what the benefits are for them. And then the other part of my job is to really be in the market and talk to designers and contractors about what is Cradle to Cradle certified and why does it matter to you and your clients. So I do a little bit of everything every day is the short answer.
I love that. You said we have to talk the same language to measure impact. I absolutely love that. And that's why we're launching the AOC Master Facilitators Group that is going to be a paywall that we're launching, that we just launched the podcast to talk through what that all means. Just like you referenced how you're facilitating the transaction, how to be C2C. And of course, there's a pay to that because someone has to put all this stuff together to set the rules of the game. So as this podcast is for our contractors and affiliates to grow their business, I'm really curious, how does this conversation affect contractors and what role do they play? And I want to tee this up by saying, if you're really going to be a cradle to cradle, or what we call the customer care wheel in the art of construction, you have to care about all this stuff, right? Because we all have to do our parts in the handoff. But can you talk about that and maybe kind of talk, when I went to your website, and we'll put all this stuff in the show notes, where I totally agree with you, the best part of your website is go look at others who have done that and then relate to them, right? Put yourself in their shoes. Maybe you're using a product where somebody asked you about this stuff and you didn't quite know. And you can go use this to say, maybe I should use this carpet instead of that carpet, or this window because of that window. So what's your take on how does this conversation affect our affiliates and contractors, and what role do they play in this?
Yeah, they play a really critical one. One that I think needs to be talked out more about more, especially when we're talking about healthy materials, is that contractors are putting their bodies on the line, right? Factory workers, fence line communities, contractors, your bodies are on the line here. And so when we want to work with products that are healthy, we mean products that are healthy for you and your workers. And so I hear a lot from contractors that they're looking to create healthier, you know, non-toxic spaces for their staff to be working in, right? And so I think that's a really important part about how this literally affects contractors. That's sort of on a human visceral level. And then when it comes to business, they are also on the front lines of being asked to be experts in this now. So I work a lot with end users, with big clients. I mean, all the tech giants have made very public climate pledges, and they are having building projects, and they are looking to contractors and designers and architects to help them fulfill those pledges. And so this is not a trend that is coming or going. This is on the rise. And if you want to work with clients who have big projects, they're going to ask contractors to be accountable to this information. They're going to want to know, what products are you using? Are they toxic? What is the embodied carbon in a product? What is, you know, help us account for this impact of this building that you're building. And so that's the other aspect where contractors, where affects them. It does affect their bodies, but it also affects their business because they're being asked to be experts in this now.
Yeah. And, you know, Ren, you bring up a great point there where, you know, it brought back for me, I'm just remembering once again, back in the day, is that we would finish these, you know, high-end homes, and we'd finish the flooring, and then the guys would come in and apply Glitza. And Glitza, while it was a great product and was bulletproof for, you know, dog nails and scratches and all kinds of stuff, you would see guys walking around in respirators applying this stuff. And then you couldn't go in there. And I don't even remember 72 hours or whatever. Because God forbid you'd fall asleep in there or something like that, man, it would kill you. And then Bonacemi came out, right? And it was all water-based, latex-based. Just as good a performance, but not difficult on your body. So yeah, I mean, I always wondered, and I felt bad specifying that stuff, and you'd see guys in there applying it, and you're like, man, what is this doing to these people's lungs?
Yeah. And also, we're discovering that the chemicals that are in our bodies, we are passing on to our children. That's why the forever chemicals, PFAS, have been in the news so often, is that there have been studies done that they are showing up in our kids' bodies and affecting our endocrine systems and their endocrine systems as well. So it's not just our bodies, but our children's bodies and our grandchildren's bodies. And so it really starts to become, I mean, I have a 21-month-old, and it's starting to become very visceral to me because she puts everything in her mouth. And so, you know, you start to realize, like, you want the best for your kids. You want the best for your, you know, potential grandchildren or grandchildren. And so it starts to become pretty real when you start to see what's in your house. And you want to make sure that, and as a designer, I wanted to make sure that the contractors that I were working with were not having to wear those respirators.
100% agree. And the kicker, though, to challenge us all here is you don't know what you don't know, and you're jaded by what you think you know. And the problem with this is we call them the warriors. John Stambaugh, who leads our Warriors, our Blue Collar Warrior series, to connecting the field to the office. There's this huge dichotomy going on out there where Matt talks about the workers and the respirators, like the people that have been doing this for a long time. The next wave of warriors are much more educated, right? And if you're more educated, it really reverse engineer this cradle to cradle thing. We really have to figure out how to pass the baton and educate that on both sides of the fence. And that's why it's one of my huge passions in the art of construction. So when we talk about our contractors and our affiliates, the warriors are the key thing. They're the ones out there doing the work that Matt is talking about, right? So what's your take? We talked about the contractors. What about the trades when they have to take this kit of parts and put it all together? And in my world of glazing and windows, owning a window and door company, there's a lot of kit of parts of just use that caulking or this, that, and all these different things, but it all becomes one assembled system. What's your take about that with the trades?
Oh, same as with the contractors, where it's just at a smaller or a different scale, not necessarily smaller, but at a different scale. And when I work with, you know, manufacturers and we're getting into the like 100 parts per million, like they're having to talk to their suppliers and their suppliers' suppliers. So it's kind of like contractors, you're working with your trades and your subcontractors and your sub-subcontractors. Like we just have to get down to the nitty gritty and you have to do it from the very baseline. But again, I if we have cradle to cradle certified, if we have healthy products, the trades are affected because their products that they have to work with should be healthy as well. So I think it just all, it all continues to trickle down.
So how do you reach the people? I know you just mentioned you're 21 month old. And I know for us, when we had our son, who he's on the other end, he's 23 now. It really becomes personal for you. You really start to notice the environment, like what you're putting in your body, what your kids are around, all that kind of stuff. How does C2C reach out to just the populace and cities and neighborhoods and things like that to really get the people to understand this? And the fact that it actually, you know, relates to them on an individual basis, and it's not those people or that city or whatever, but it's, it comes down to their actual environment.
Yeah. I think that, designers are a big part of our community. We all have to be storytellers. I think that's a big part of this is connecting this to our clients and telling them why it matters in ways that are relatable. It's not just about stats, but like, how does being in a self, in a safe, healthy building feel? You know, like you said, your staff came back and they're like, it smells good. Like, what does it smell like to be in a healthy building? What does it feel like to be in a healthy building? And that, and sort of connecting it to those tangible things, I think is really an important part of what we do. I would also say that this is becoming sort of a top-down, bottom-up movement where there are studies being done about sort of consumers at large. And so, you know, one statistic is that 72% of global consumers are willing to pay more for sustainable products. 2/3 of shoppers say they will switch from a brand they usually buy to another brand if it has more in-depth product information. So consumers want this. And so they are asking for this to happen. And so I work a lot with designers who are saying, my clients are asking for things and I want to help them meet this, this pledge that they've made or the concerns that they have and things like that. So it really is, sort of all over the place right now, but that's why I get to the part where we all have to talk the same language to measure impact, because right now we're all kind of talking, but in different directions and about different things and about different statistics. And so I really want to try and get us in harmony there so we can measure what's actually working.
So to answer your question, like what does a clean building smell like? You know, one guy came up to me and he said, you know, it's like the Kool and the Gang song, you know, fresh. It's so fresh. It's exciting. Yeah. And, you know, it was, it's hard to say. It's like a breath of fresh air. You walk in and you're like, wow. Yeah. You don't smell all these like intense odors. It's like the opposite of a chef's kitchen, you know, it's, but it is a good smell. So let me throw the big question at you here. So what is the BHAG, right? The big, hairy, audacious goal for the C2C Institute in the next 10 years in the built environment? What are you guys shooting for?
Well, we're shooting to just transform the world and power the shift to a circular economy, you know, and create products that are healthy, circular, and equitable. And we want to help everyone get on their path to that. So we want to work with any manufacturer on that pathway to get to their healthy net zero equitable goals. And so that is really our big mission that we try to do every day.
I remember when we first LEED first started and US Green Building Council, and then there was a product declarations and all that kind of stuff. And there was a lot of conversation going around in the industry, mainly outside the sustainability industry, talking about, well, of course, you know, I mean, they're gonna certify this stuff because it allows their partners to sell more stuff. And to me, I think with C2C, the thing I like about it with you guys being a nonprofit, it's like you're like a referee in a game, and you're like a transition broker, or sorry, a transaction broker in the real estate industry, where really you guys are neutral. And you know, obviously you have goals and things that you want to see achieved, but other than costs for services and fees to cover your costs, you guys really aren't making a profit. And so it allows you guys to be sort of the Switzerland of the material industry. And yeah. So I am impressed by that, because I think it will, people are jaded, right? You know, it's like, okay, so what's in it for you? Like, what are you getting out of this thing? And I think it's great that you guys have set this thing up and you have this process that people can come in, get third-party verification, and that's where you're going to see quicker adoption.
So much gold, right? We're all jaded at some way, and we need something to check us, right? And so as we close this thing out, we'll make sure we put links to the show notes, all kinds of great content on your website, on how to have this safe and circular material choices put out there. But as we close this thing out, the questions we always ask, Ren, I'm curious as this for our contractors and affiliates, and we kind of talked about how they fit into this circular economy. What is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Okay. I have a somewhat weird answer to this. Which is that I think the metaverse is going to come into play, and not the metaverse that like Zuckerberg has engineered, but the actual metaverse where you aggregate a lot of data in real time, because part of having a circular economy is about returning existing products to a manufacturing facility or to a recycling center, measuring impacts in real time, understanding the carbon impacts. And so we're starting to just accumulate data, not just about our products, but about our buildings and how these things are being affected in real time. And I think that the metaverse is going to be a place where it all kind of comes together, right? Like we have like Revit, but on steroids. You know, how do we keep track of all of this information in a way that is usable and accessible by everyone on this project life cycle? You know, the owners want to have this information, the contractors need to feed into it, the suppliers need to feed into it, the designers want to understand it. So I think the metaverse is going to be a thing that happens in the construction industry, you know, probably with larger projects at first, obviously, but we need a way to aggregate all this data and make it actionable.
Ren, so much gold. Thank you so much on behalf of the Art of Construction Tribe and all the master facilitators to come in and make us think about how we need to think a little bit differently, right? Because you just get lost in the shuffle and just, I got to get this job done, right? But as we're leaving this out there for everybody to think about, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and properly, safely grow their business?
Yeah, one thing I think that I tell architecture firms and I tell contractors a lot is that we are all in this business now. We are all in the climate business, and we all have an impact. And if clients are not asking you to be an expert in this quite yet, they will be quite soon. So, you know, we've been talking about this. I have a design background, but I get really excited by Larry Fink's letter to CEOs from BlackRock every year, because he just keeps turning up the heat. And his letter this year, he said, every industry will be transformed by the transition to a net zero world. The question is, will you lead or will you be led? And study after study shows that the people who do this work early, who understand their impacts, who are getting ahead of this, benefit the most. And by benefit, I mean profit. Profit the most, build brand equity, innovate, work with exciting clients, work on exciting projects. And so I always tell contractors and designers and architects, get into this work, because we're all in it now. And our industry has such an impact on the world, and we need to transform how we do our business quickly and with rigor. And so now is the time to take action. Now is the time to lead. So if you're a manufacturer, get in touch with me. Let's help you get on your, meet those net zero goals, get a healthy, optimized product. If you're a designer and contractor, go to c2ccertified.org, start specifying products. You can also reach out to me. I always love talking to you. But now is the time to prioritize, you know, healthy, circular, equitable products so that we can get to that type of world, that type of economy.
Ren, good on you. We're huge fans. Thank you so much for coming in.
I'm huge fans of you now. I'm so excited.
Awesome. Well, go check out the show notes. And thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. Tribe, so much gold there. And as I recap this, I want to talk about saying, always have that cool tool in your back pocket. And as I take this podcast back to my day-to-day in my window tribe, I think I'm going to go back and say, you know what? And this is where I just say it out. We just hit over 500,000 listens. So you got to be careful what you say. I'm going to say, no, 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 Forever Chemicals. I was in a meeting this morning where I was telling them, no, we're not going to, if you're going to go with these vinyl windows on this part of the project, we're not going to supply it. This morning, I was in that exact meeting, and they're like, well, it's this chicken or the egg syndrome of the PVC window world that we, that ideal. And, but having this education helps you really set your rules of the game from a proper set of expectations. And she talked about, I love how they're looking at it, saying it's not an all or nothing, right? It's you get this badge of different levels of figuring out this clarity and gamifying this stuff and figuring out how to be part of this circular economy. And we have to eliminate this greenwashing. And that's where Matt, I've always been a huge champion. Now you talk about there's a lot of different types of greens out there, right? To figure out how to optimize all this stuff. But the part that blew my mind in the gooey middle of this conversation, 80 to 90,000 chemicals out there. And in the US, we've only banned five, but then C2C, if I said this right, and she can go on the message board or circle back when we get in with the AOC master facilitators, but they have 26,000 tribe. I got to say that one more time, 80 to 90,000 chemicals, only five have been banned by the US, and C2C from their research has shown there should be 26,000 of those that we should be no, no, no. And the shiny object of asbestos, as we talked a little bit about our old houses, once people are aware, it's handled. But awareness is key, and that's why we do this podcast, because we don't want the new carpet smell, the new car smell. But she talked about how we all have to speak the same language. But to speak the same language, and when we speak the same language, then guess what we can do, tribe? We can measure, and we can measure the impact, right? And that's what... You know, we Scott and the team has really challenged me to say, Devin, you got to celebrate this 500,000 listens and the fact that you've been at this almost 300 episodes. And it's time to do something really special to take this to the next, because people are listening and being coming. And it's not about a top down or a bottom up. We're a circle. And literally the platform that Scott chose, the back engine of this whole thing we're launching is called Circle. And it's led by the AOC master facilitators that have the passion and our lifelong learners like Ren, who has from Alaska and in design and got the theory and the principles, but then took massive action when she was educated about that. And I can't wait to have all of us, our AOC chefs in the kitchen at work, and come to the table and be able to cook up a dinner like Ren does and go back and have some pink ladies and talk about the real verse to go along with the metaverse. And so it's all about this stuff of aggregating the data, but you have to be able to straddle one foot in the digital world and one foot in the physical world, because we're out there doing this every day, all day, every day, right? And, you know, we talk about that, how do you eat an elephant? Well, it's one big bite at a time. It'll crunch you, but it's the mosquitoes taking those little bites all the time, right? That you have to work on all this stuff. So let's lead the change and all work together, because it's here, right? The net zero through the keyword she said. We can talk about unicorns and snowflakes all day long about things don't make it. Matt, I turn it to you to close it out. It's all about profitability.
Yeah, that's one of the green, things, right? It's like if people really start listening, if the green includes money, but it also includes sustainability. It's got to make sense on both sides of the equation. So I just wanted to make just a few observations, more sort of high level stuff. One was, REN and C2C are really about blowing up the paradigm, because there's a certain generation, man, and you're younger than I am, but you kind of grew up in the US and you're like bigger and newer is better, right? And then you take your first trip to Europe and you see old stuff there that's been repurposed and you're like, wow, this is cool stuff. And that's why people from the US fall in love with Europe. Other observation I want to make was just storyteller, right? So Ren is a great storyteller. So I put her in the top three beverages all time on the show based on her Pink Lady, but I put her in the top three storytellers of all time too. 'Cause I mean, just the sheer data and percentages that she had at her fingertips, talking about the building industry having 40% of the waste by volume, and somehow in the building industry, and I include A, E, and C in there, architecture, engineering, construction, I even put real estate in there, is we think we're kind of invisible in a sense. And yet,
We're just
look at,
transactions, just the transaction, right?
yeah, but just look at, like, man, how much impact we have on the physical planet, right? So it is time for us to start paying attention. And so by saying that, my call to action is, if you care, if you listen, if this podcast has touched you, reach out to Ren and reach out to CTC, and let's all band together and make a difference, because we are in a closed loop system in on Earth. And even once you get outside with Elon Musk and his Mars ship, it's still a closed loop system out in the universe. It's just going Buzz Lightyear to infinity. So
Awesome
that's what
work,
I think.
Matt.
Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, and I know we have a few more around Green Build. Like, massive shout out to the people that are, it's who and then what, right? So it's really cool having these different conferences and different platforms. But huge fans. Matt, thanks. Good work. Learned a bunch. And hopefully we all see you in the AOC Master Facilitators launching first of the year on these global and timeless fireside chats. Crush it out there today, Trev.